Now I introduce the speaker. Today our speaker comes from Fresno, California. His home group is the Morning Maintenance Meeting. His name is Jim White. Yeah. His sobriety date is June 7th, 1982. So if you do the math, he'll have 33 years on Sunday. Yeah. Really close, huh? When I asked him what his favorite saying was, it is, if you want to drink, that's your business. If you want to stay sober, that's my business. He likes to help people out. So let's welcome him to the stage and give him a big round of applause. Jim White.
There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. I'm a grateful and fortunate alcoholic. My name's Jim White. Through the grace of God and the program and fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, I've now found it necessary to take a drink since June 7, 1982. And for that, I am truly grateful. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. For allowing me to be sober one more day and to be here. Now, I have to be careful how I make that statement about not finding it necessary to take a drink. Because I was down in Abilene, Texas, and an old guy there named Fred, you know, everybody in Texas, when they introduce themselves, they give their sobriety date. And this old guy named Fred says, stood up and he says, my name is Fred and I'm an alcoholic. I haven't found it necessary to take a drink since August 17th, 1951. And somebody said, Fred, you was drunk last Thursday. And he said, but it wasn't necessary. Life is tremendous. Life is tremendous, but it shall get better. You know, I will attempt to tell you what my story is, what it was like, what happened to me, and how it is today. There's a couple of things that you need to know right off the bat. I will speak of Jesus. If you don't want to hear anybody talk about Jesus, don't invite a Baptist preacher to talk to you. Because I am licensed, ordained, and that's what we do. You know, that's what we do, and that's how we do it. So, to begin with, I was born and raised in South Louisiana on a farm way out in the swamps. You know, there weren't very many people of color where I grew up at. And being black wasn't real popular back then. You know, it wasn't something people was excited about. So you might say I grew up to have kind of a attitude toward white people. I didn't like them. I didn't like them. Their dog, their cat, their grandma, their cars, their houses. Come think of it, I can't think of anything I liked about them. There is a twist to it, you know. My mother was one of them. I didn't like her either. She was mean. You know, they told me she passed away in October of 91, but I think she mean away. She's somewhere is meaning right now. I grew up in a household where my mother used to beat people. And she was good at it. If you were playing baseball and there was five boys outside playing baseball and it hit the window and broke the window, she didn't come out and ask questions. She came out and beat all five. And you say, Mom, I didn't do anything wrong. She said, you did something I didn't know about. So you got beat anyway. Some kid would say, but I don't live here. She said, but you're here now. So I grew up with an attitude, you know. And you know, the family I grew up in, I didn't fit in. See, because I'm the black sheep of the family. And when I say that, I literally mean I'm the black sheep of the family. Okay. All my other brothers and sisters are pale face. They have the lighter hue. I didn't like them either. I thought that me and my dad was the only people in the family that was worthy of being noticed. Of course, as I recall, we drank a lot together too. You know, my brothers and sisters drink like fish too. Don't worry about it. They didn't miss that boat. See, I went to an all-black school in the beginning. And when I went into the eighth grade, this bus came by and I got on it and there was no more black people in my school. And so I went to a school where I didn't fit in. Not that I fitted in the all-black school, but I didn't fit in this school either. So I'm in a family that I don't fit in. I'm in a school that I don't fit in. And I graduate from this school. I don't know how, but I graduated from this school. You know. And the one thing I remember about my graduation is that I was not allowed to go to the graduation celebration, to dance, to dinner, because of my color, which gave me reasons to hate even more. And I got a job right out of high school working in the oil field. That was not a real good experience, although they paid me real well. There were people that I worked with that told me things like, remember, I'm in the KKK. And so wherever Jim White went, his gun went with him. I like to say I didn't go anywhere without it. I didn't even visit my mom without it. Because I know she carried a 38 in her purse. And she was capable of doing anything when she went sideways. So, no, I didn't trust anybody. The only person I could feel comfortable and let my guards down around was my dad. He was my friend. He was my hero. He was the guy that I turned to. Anytime things went wrong in my life, he could fix things that other people couldn't. I loved him with all my heart. He was my God. And I put my whole trust into this man. See, everybody else was just in the way. But I might want to tell you that at this point I was drinking. I don't know exactly when I started drinking, but I was drinking. I was drinking a lot. I worked offshore in the oil fields in the Gulf of Mexico. 7 days on and 7 days off. Or I should say I worked 7 days on and drank 7 days off. You know. And because they paid me a lot of money, I was able to get fast cars and good-looking women. And you know, I thought I was the best thing that came along since sliced bread. I still think I'm pretty damn good-looking. You know, you don't have to agree. But I just think you're jealous if you don't. Yeah, I think a lot of me. I'm not all that, but I think a lot of me. You know. So, you mix alcohol with somebody who's not too bright. And a fast car, and you got problems. Now, the first incident that I had that involved the police was I got arrested inadvertently for OWI. In Louisiana, they call it operating a motor vehicle while intoxicated. You don't drive, you operate. You don't have a driver's license, you have an operator's license. You know, so I was operating this motor vehicle while under the influence. And I came up on this engineering phenomenon. Somebody put a curve in the road. And for some reason, my car went straight at a high rate of speed, and it clipped three pine trees about this big, chopped them off about this high from the ground, launched that puppy over a 6-strand barbed wire fence into the field, where it commenced flipping. And I remember when it stopped flipping, the first thought came to my mind is, I have a pint of Chivas Regal in here. I hope it's okay. So most people would get out the car and check to see if they're okay. I am a real alcoholic. I searched around in the car and found my pint of Chivas Regal Scotch. That baby was okay. I made my way back to the highway, and this car stopped by then, and this lady says, are you okay? I says, I'm perfectly fine. You know? She says, are you hurt? I says, no, I'm perfectly fine. So they called the highway patrolman. They came out, got a chance to light in my face, looks at me, looks at his partner, and says, he looks okay to you, huh? He said, looks okay to me. So they gave me a citation for failing to control a motor vehicle. I couldn't deny that one. So he says, you got to go to court and post bail on it. So I go to court and they says, the bail on this citation is $150,000 property tax, property bond. And I'm like, huh? He says, but you can go talk to the DA. So I went down to the DA's office and he was busy. I went back the next day and he was still busy. I went the following day, he was still busy. I did this for a week and finally the guy come walking in and he says, are you the guy who's been coming in every day? I says, yes. He says, follow me. So I went in and he says, look, this is the way it is. $33.50 fine. Pay the man on your way out. It's a good deal. I went, uh-huh. So I paid the man on my way out. For some reason, the body shop was able to piece that car back together. God, I love that car. It went fast. In fact, they got me one night doing 147 and she was still climbing. I wish I'd have remembered that. That could have been good. That's what the citation said anyway, 147. Right. Shortly after that, I found out I had to go to court for operating a motor vehicle while under the influence. What had happened was I was on my way home from the racetrack, and I came across another engineering phenomenon, a curve in the highway. And I was traveling down a high rate of speed. I don't know if anybody in here know what a Plymouth Duster 340 was like. Well, we didn't have the 340 in it. Brains over here switched it out for a 383 Magnum. And it would go. My dad would often wonder when the wings would come out. Anyway, I went straight through the curve, straddled this canal, skidded across it and hit a telephone pole, and it stopped my car. The highway patrol came out. They were not thrilled. They're not excited. They arrested me immediately for being black. Charged me with operating a motor vehicle while intoxicated. And they transported me to jail. I get to jail and I'm like, whoa, I'm not going into that place. And he says, you have to post a bond of $265. And I says, get the paperwork. Here's the cash. Got to go. Right. That was the end of my fast car. In fact, the following day, I bought a black Chevy Caprice. Two-door hardtop. With a cranberry red interior. I was all that in a bag of chips with a lot of crunch. And I hit the highway doing what I always did. You know, chasing women and drinking booze. I couldn't have been an alcoholic because I drank this scotch. Alcoholics don't drink Chivas Regal Scotch. And they most certainly don't drink it out of a crystal glass. They do not wear $500 boots. They don't wear nice suits. I've seen them. You see them walking down the street on Skid Row. I was not that person. While I'm out there doing what I do, this thing came in the mail that said I had to go to court because I still had this little operating the motor vehicle while intoxicated thing going on. And so I go to court to check in on it, and this guy says, you're not going to see the judge today. What we're going to do is we're going to send you to 8 AA meetings. This was in April of 1975. You go to 8 AA meetings, and we'll change it to reckless driving. I went to my first AA meeting in April of 1975. There was some old guy standing up at a podium like this, talking trash about how horrible alcohol was and how evil it was. I mean, this dude must have been 45 years old. And I thought, if I ever got that old, I'd quit drinking too. I mean, his life was over. And he said weird stuff like he parked his car in the garage while his wife's car was still there. Woke up the next morning and found her car in the pool. Slapped her around because she parked his car in the pool. His wife left him. Mine didn't. I didn't have one, I mean, but girlfriends didn't stay with me. I don't know why. Something's wrong with women. Seriously. You know, you get drunk, you punch them in the face, and all at once they want to break up. Go figure. So, I went to that one meeting, and I thought, who cares what they charged me with? The fine was the same. And I didn't go back. I went to court. I paid the fine. They suspended my license. If you're an alcoholic like me, you know what that means? Nothing. They told me I had to get insurance on the car. If you're an alcoholic like me, you know what that means? Nothing. So I continued doing what I was doing. And I have this brother-in-law that decided to beat up my sister one day. And I went over to have a chat with him. And he said a few choice words to me and called me a few choice names I didn't appreciate. So I pulled out my .32 and I shot him twice in the chest. You know, he's okay. We drink together after that. Not that day, but the sheriff came out, deputy came out and arrested me, and they charged me with something called attempted homicide. And so I knew I was in a lot of trouble. And so I went to court and I stood in front of this guy named Judge Foreman. And Judge Foreman made me an offer I couldn't refuse. He says, you like to shoot at people, you like to shoot people, you like to fight, you like to do a lot of things that we don't like you doing in Louisiana. So I'm going to make you an offer. You can go with one of those people sitting in the back of the room, and they'll give you a uniform that you can earn stripes on. Or I'll give you a uniform with stripes on it already. And I says, can I go with that one? He says, if she'll have you. And the first one I pointed at was the Navy. She took me, so I left. And I embarked on a fine naval career. You know, I went through boot camp. I don't know how I made it through there, but I came back home for 2 weeks. I don't know how I made it through there because I drank the whole time. Then I went to school. This is where my life started to change drastically. I'm going to this school to learn how to operate high-pressure steam boilers. And while I'm at this school, I went from 3 in the afternoon to 11 o'clock at night. So I drink the rest of the time. And I'm on my way to school one day, and they find me at the on one of those landings on the stairs in a little ball, and they transported me to the Naval Hospital, and they put me on the fifth floor because I had a pancreatitis attack. And while I'm on the fifth floor, this guy named George shows up with his little white uniform. He's white, all the fancy little medals on it, and he says, Jim, do you have a drinking problem? I said, no. He says, well, if this happens again, we'll think you have a drinking problem and we'll do something about it. And I'm thinking, I don't like you, you white, go away. And he went away. 5 days later, they let me out of the hospital. 2 days later, they found me on that same landing, about 2:45 in the afternoon, and they transported me to the Naval Hospital and put me on the 5th floor. Guess who showed up the next day? George. And he says, "We're going to do something about your drinking problem." So they sent me to alcohol rehab on the 9th floor, where I did everything like I was told to. I said I was an alcoholic. I went to the meetings. I took the stupid chips. I pretend I liked the people that was there. Okay, not so well. I had a few choice words for them. I gave them the finger a lot. Told them things like, "I hope you get killed on your way home." And they said, "We love you, Jim." And I said, "I don't love you. Come have a seat next to me. Why? I don't like you." Didn't like them. Didn't want to be there. I made it through there, and they sent me back to the school where I didn't drink at the school at all. I made it through the school with a 97.5% grade point average. Turns out I was smart when I wasn't drunk. I could actually read and comprehend things. Packed my sea bag, headed to the airport. I got to Chicago O'Hare, got me a double shot of Bacardi 151, and was off to the races again. I got to San Diego. That is where I got the first ship I was going on. As I'm walking across the brow to report to the ship, I meet these guys coming off, and they say, "Who are you?" I says, "I'm a boiler technician, new boiler technician." And the guy says, "We'll wait for you. We're going out to drink beer." So I'm like, "Hey, who?" Met the right people right away. 4 days later, we deployed for Westpac. We visited 9 different countries, and I'm proud to say I only got arrested in 8 of them. I got back to Long Beach. My commanding officer thought it was a wise idea for me to go to a level 2 program, a refresher course. This was in 79. I don't remember most of 80. I got little figments of imaginations from 81. I remember coming back from Oklahoma in December of 81, and my commanding officer used to ask these really dumb questions. "Where were you? What did you do with the car you rented?" "I rented a car." "What were you doing in Vegas?" "I went to Vegas." "Why were you in Oklahoma?" "I could answer that." Things were not going along well for me. At that point, he recommended that I go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I'd go to meetings. And halfway through the meetings, I had to go outside and get a drink because I had to put up with you white people. And I went to meetings. And I go get a drink. And I come back into meetings and I sit there and think, what a pathetic bunch of people. All the while I'm dying. And I don't even know it. May 30th, 1982, I went up a one-way the wrong way in downtown San Diego. And I hit a car head-on. Don't worry, nobody was in the car. The driver was standing on the sidewalk writing a citation to a woman he stopped. The San Diego police was not thrilled with me, least to say. Especially when you hit a squad car that a white policeman's driving. At least that's how I seen it. So they arrested me again because I was black. This is where the turning point in my life came. I'm sitting in this cell with all these drunks. And there's this black guy walking back and forth. Now, let me correct that. There's this black guy stumbling back and forth. I was sitting because I couldn't do anything. I was in no shape to stand up, let alone drive a car. And he was complaining because they keep arresting him because he's black. This was May, number 5 month. He had been arrested in 1982, 5 times for drunk driving. And in my state, I was even sharp enough to figure out that was one a month, average. And I could surely see he was drunk. That's why he was in there. And then this thought hit my brains. That's why I know I got 2 brain cells left. They must have touched. And he said, could you be here because you're drunk? And I was charged with driving while intoxicated in the state of California. I went to court. And when I walked into the courtroom, this police officer just says, that's him. And they all laughed. And I didn't know what was so funny. But he had told them the story about me walking around as sober as a judge. And I blew a .38. BAC. I was in no shape to be laying down. And I was operating a motor vehicle. So I pleaded guilty to the charge, and the judge says, you know what you face when you plead guilty to the charge? You may want to talk to an attorney. And I says, I'm guilty. And God started working in my life. At that moment, because the judge was my division officer's father-in-law, and he had already heard about me. And he said to me, should I send you to Alcoholics Anonymous? And this was in August of 82, and I says, I've been gone since June of 82. Actually, I've been gone before that, but I quit drinking in June of 82. And he says, then we won't order you to Alcoholics Anonymous. He says, because I think you know what to do. But should I see you again, it will not be a good trip. He fined me $650. Pay restitution to the city of San Diego, $17,817.74. Those police interceptors are not cheap. I own one. I can't drive it, but I paid for it. This is a good time for me to say thank you, Jesus. So I started going to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I go to meetings, and I didn't like anybody in the meetings. And I went to more meetings, and I didn't like anybody in the meetings. And I remember telling this lady one night, because she happened to be Hispanic, and I thought I'd talk to her instead of all them white people trying to oppress me. And I said, I don't like these people. And she smiled, and she says, I know someone you can talk to. And she gave me a little card with this name on it. It was Ed Hill. She says he's in the Navy. So I found out where Ed Hill worked in the Navy, and I went to talk to him. Ed Hill was black. I'm like, hey, right on, brother. He sent me to 4545 East 45th Street in San Diego to a meeting. I walked in the meeting, and everybody in the room was black. I'm like, hey, my family, I'm home. And I sit next to this beautiful lady named Chana Allen. She wrote a book called I'm Black and I'm Sober. If you haven't read it, you should. And she looks at me and she says, you look awful happy. I said, I'm just good to be amongst my people. She says, how long have you been sober? I said, about 3 weeks. She says, and who's been keeping you sober up till then? And I didn't like her. She was not nice. Because she's getting ready to say something nice about white people, and I don't like them. She says, that's what I thought. Now you go sit over there in the corner, you shut the hell up, and we'll tell you when you have something to say. I didn't like her at all. I met her husband that night too. I didn't like him either. He was mean, like her. This guy appointed himself God above me, called himself my sponsor. He asked me if I had a sponsor. I said no. He handed me a card, and all I had on it was John F. and a phone number. He says, call me every day. I'll tell you not to. I I told him I didn't want to. He says, I know you don't want to, but just do it. I says, I don't like you. He says, I know that, but just do it. I don't know what he was thinking. You don't like white people. I'm black. What's wrong with me? Well, I didn't like the black people hanging out with the white people. Or the Mexican people hanging out with the black people who was hanging out with the white people. I didn't like anybody, including myself. I just didn't know that. And so this guy, John, started taking me through 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, but not right away, because it took me 18 months to get to that point where I wanted to do the steps. I go to meetings, and they say, you need to go to these meetings. I go to meetings, and they say, you need to clean ashtrays, because they smoked in meetings back then, and it says, I don't smoke. And John says, I don't want you to smoke, I want you to clean the ashtrays. I didn't drink coffee up till then. He made me make coffee. I figured if I got to make this crap, I'll drink it. I remember the first pot of coffee I made in Alcoholics Anonymous. It was on Tuesday night in Nashville City. You know that big silver thing on top? I poured a whole can of coffee in it. Plugged that bad boy in. And I sat back to wait for somebody to complain about it so I could tell them what I thought of them. And some old guy sitting over there with his knife and fork eating his coffee said, who made the coffee tonight? I said, Jim White did. He says, we need him to make coffee all the time. That boy know how to make coffee. So I made coffee. And then I got a year not drinking, and John says, I'm not giving you a cake. Because in San Diego, your sponsor get up and present you with a cake. Tell them how wonderful you are. He says, I'm not giving you a cake. I don't believe you want to stay sober. I didn't like John a whole lot. But I called him every night. See, John told me, call him every day. And I didn't call him the next day. So I showed up at the Thursday night meeting, and I'm sitting there, and he walked in the room, and he sat right next to me, and he says, look, when I tell the MF to call me, I expect him to call me. We're going to be that way about it? I can play that game, too. I lived on a ship. So I waited till about 11:45 that night when I thought he was asleep. I walked down to the end of the pier, dropped the card in the phone, dialed this number. It rang, then it rang, then it rang. Then he finally wake up and he answers the phone and goes, hello. And I says, I'm calling you, asshole. And I hung up. And I did that for the next 18 months. Every day I was in port, the same statement. And I always called at a different time. Sometimes I call as late as 2 o'clock in the morning. Because I wanted him to show up at the meeting and says, don't call me at that time. Then I could quit calling him. 18 months into this whole thing, I woke up one morning at 2 o'clock in the morning and I called this man. And I told him, I think I'm losing my mind, John. He says, rest easy. You can't lose what you don't have. He says, but I do know what's wrong with you. He says, come on over. Get that big book that I gave you and bring it with you. I went over to his house, and he took me through 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous as they're outlined in that book. You see? And he told me before we started, he said, you're going to have something that we call a spiritual experience. Once you get done with these 12 steps, people will respond to you in a different manner. They will no longer treat you like they used to. You will no longer treat people the same way. I read those 12 steps. I thought, man, this guy's been smoking some heavy stuff. But I did what he said. We did the first 3 steps. When we got to the 3rd step, he says, get on your knees. We're going to turn your life over to God because you're not doing a real good job with it. See, that is why when I stand up to speak over here today or any day, the first words that I say before I come up here is to God, please do something, because if you don't, we're in trouble. See, if God don't do anything, we are in trouble. See, So I turned my life over to God as I understood him. I understood him to be Jesus. Because that's what my sponsor told me. I didn't know nothing about it. Okay. I deployed on this ship to go on cruise. And I told the chaplain about it one day, and he gave me a Bible. He says, read this. And so I started reading it from the front page. And I read it right through the Old Testament. And I started reading the New Testament. And I got to this part where it was Luke. I'm halfway through Luke, and it dawned on me. I go find the chaplain, and I said, chaplain, do you know that these three guys wrote about the same guy? He packed me on the shoulder, gave me a hug, and he said, bless your poor dumb heart. The whole book is about the same guy. Just keep reading it. And I went, so I kept reading it. You know, I got back to San Diego, and I'm about two and a half years sober at that point. And I'm back from cruise, and life has gone along good. And I'm coming up on 3 years, and my sponsor says to me, come to the Tuesday night meeting, I'm going to give you a cake. I'm like, yeah, buddy. So I showed up at the Tuesday night meeting, and John stood up, and he held this little chocolate cake with three candles on it. Because his sponsor said all these great things about you, then he'd get you to talk about how wonderful you are. He says, blow out the candles. So I blew out the candles while everybody sang happy birthday. He says, I'm John. That's Jim. Here's your damn cake. Now go sit down. So much for the fanfare. This is the man who told me after I got done with the 12 steps that my life would change. This is the man that told me that people would treat me differently. I went to a Saturday night meeting called the Fairmont Group in San Diego. And there was this tall, skinny guy that stood in the doorway the very first time I went there, about 18 months earlier. And he opened his arms, and what he said to me is, God is love, love is God. And I told him what to do with his God, and I told him what to do with his love, and I told him what I would do if he ever tried to hug me again. Because I am not one of them kind of guys. He has no idea who he's messing with. So for the next 18 months, when I walked up that sidewalk, he was not at that door. He was getting a cookie, giving somebody coffee, saying hello to somebody, but he wasn't at that door. I did the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that Saturday night, I walk up the steps. We called this guy Starving Marvin. Tall, skinny guy. And he stood in the doorway. And he opened his arms. And he says, God is love. Love is God. That's the first man I ever hugged in my life. Not even knowing that my life had changed. I was as sharp and bright as a black bowling ball. I had no clue that I was a completely different person. I had no clue that God had entered my life and was doing things with me that I would never dream of doing. You're looking at a man who retired from the United States Navy in 1995, the same Navy that was kicking him out in 1982. You're looking at a man who retired from the county of Fresno about a year and a half ago. How that happened, I don't know. You're looking at a man who is licensed and ordained as a pastor. How did that happen? Only with Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm married to a beautiful lady, and I wonder every day what she did that God would give her me. And I'm pretty perplexed by what I did so good that he would give me her. I got 8 grandchildren who love to see their papa. You know, there is nothing that excites me more than walking into church late on a Sunday while our pastor's trying to speak, and 7 kids jump up and just rush at me, and their mom's going, oh! And I'm like, yeah, buddy. And pastor stops and goes, yep, Reverend White's here. Them kids love me. None of my children ever seen me drink. None of my children seen me wear handcuffs. None of my children seen me beat on their mom. Never beat on their mom. She's not big, but I bet she can be mean if you went sideways with her. I think she can be as mean as she's pretty. I come to Alcoholics Anonymous today because this is where I maintain my sanity. These are the people that gave me a life. You know, I hear people in these rooms that say things like, Alcoholics Anonymous gave me a second chance. Not me. Alcoholics Anonymous gave me the only chance. I never was about Jack till I got here. I never was about anything. I spend my days today trying to do something useful to somebody else. I hope tonight that I said something that'll help somebody other than me. I hope tonight that somebody walk out of here and know that God will take care of you, no matter what. I'm going to give you something. Say, thank you, God, no matter what. Thank you, God, no matter what. He'll protect you. Let's face it. If he could make this, what you see before you, out of what I gave him, imagine what he can do with something to start off with. Because I gave him nothing. Incidentally, I quit getting arrested. So maybe it wasn't because I was black I was being arrested. Incidentally, I quit hating white people. Maybe it wasn't because they were white I was hating them. That guy John told me to write down everything that white people did to me. And he said, when I say you, I mean only you. Don't like him. Couldn't think of one. If nobody's told you they love you and care about you today, I most certainly do. Because in spite of me, God seemed fit to wake me up sober one more day. You seemed fit to stay and listen to me. You seemed fit to help me stay sober one more day. You seemed fit to give me a life worth living. You seemed fit to give me something that I had no idea I could achieve. Life is tremendous, but it will get better. I read a book by a guy named Tremendous Jones. He says, life is tremendous, but it will get better. I read the whole book because I wanted to know what was so tremendous about it. I rolled out of bed this morning, fell on my knees. I know what's so tremendous about it. A guy like me can actually roll out of bed, fall on his knees, call on Jesus, get up and go out and help somebody else. If you don't think that's a miracle, you need to rethink it. God bless you. God bless you abundantly. Thank you for tolerating me.